anyone making it back this evening. And I'd like to begin to look into the Sermon on the Mount this evening. I feel like there's a lot in that, and I would like for us to consider that. So to begin with, I'd like for us to turn to Matthew, the 4th chapter, and in the end of the 4th chapter, beginning the verse 23, it says, "And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went out throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with divers diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and he healed them. And there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee, and from Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and from Judea, and from beyond Jordan." So I'd like for us to get it in our mind where Jesus was at when he delivered the Sermon on the Mount, most likely. I'm sure that people with more capabilities could give us a better illustration, but do you know where Galilee was? We sing the song about Jesus being the lone Galilean. You remember that? It's words of one of our songs, I believe. Galilee was a region that was a province or a area that had a designated, I guess, boundaries or what it included, kind of like we have states in our United States, that was part of the Roman Empire. And they were subject to their control, and their paid taxes to them. And Galilee included the land around the town that Jesus was raised in. You remember the name of that town? Nazareth. And he happened to be at this time, just above this, is in this 4th chapter, is where Jesus had called some of his disciples. Jesus had saw, he said he was walking by the Sea of Galilee and other areas it might be called Gennesaret. And this is the where he called Peter and Andrew. And James and John, up in this, above this, where we just read in the 4th chapter, is where he had called them. And they had been fishermen on the Sea of Galilee. So the region there between the Sea of Galilee and the Mediterranean Sea, there appears to be, in the topographical map, there appears to be a ridge of mountains, per se, higher elevation. I don't know how treacherous it is. I've never visited the area, but it says here that as Jesus went about all of Galilee or all of that region, not that it was big as the state of Missouri or big as might have been like Rhode Island or something, but as he went about that, he went to all of their synagogues or where they would come together to worship. It was not the temple. He preached the gospel This would have included probably the synagogue at Nazareth. That's where that they threatened to throw him over the edge of the hill. But he said there was, or Matthew records that there were people, great multitudes. The 25th verse says there were great multitudes from Galilee and from Decapolis and from Jerusalem, which was about probably 75 to 100 miles south of this, and from Judea. That would have been the region that Jerusalem was part of. That was Judea was another province like Galilee was, and from beyond Jordan. On the other side of Jordan, there was another province or region that was, all of these were subject to Roman rule. In the first verse of the fifth chapter, it says, "And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him," or I believe the disciples he had called, "and he opened his mouth and taught them." But it wasn't just the disciples, as Peter and James and John and Andrew. I believe he was talking about the vast multitude that had been following him that the fourth chapter identifies. Remember, our Bible is separated into chapters, and I'm sure they had reasons for making divisions where they did, but many times the thought carries on from one chapter to another. It's not that there's just a separate break in the thought, or it's kind of like there has to be a division somewheres, and whoever was segregating the chapters felt like this was the place to do it. But it appears that the multitude and him addressing them as disciples were those that were following him as he went around Galilee preaching in the synagogues. All right? So we have now in the 5th, 6th, and the 7th chapter of Matthew the what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And I want us to get a handle or kind of a picture in our mind of how to go about getting a hold of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus has been preaching along the Sea of Galilee. That's where he picked up four of his close disciples, of the 12 at least. But there was a lot of others, vast multitude. I think the number probably waxed and waned as he moved around. There might have been, when he went from one city to the next, there may have been a few that didn't go, and he may have been some more that came. But anyway, there was a large number when he came to this point. And it says he went up into a mountain. I don't think it's talking about him doing any mountain climbing and getting up on the top of a mountain. But he got up on an elevated piece of ground to where he could sit and yet speak out over or to the people. Maybe they were sitting as well. In my mind, I would picture some kind of grassy slope of some sort. May have not been that way. They may have been sitting on rocks. I don't know how that was. But he opened his mouth and he began to talk to them. And I would like for us to turn now to the end of the 7th chapter and just consider how this all ends. And then we're going to start looking at the subject matter. So if we turn to the last of the 7th chapter in the 28th verse, "And it came to pass when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine. For he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes." One as having authority. What does it mean to speak with authority? You know what you're talking about. Okay? What is knowledge of the subject. It wasn't just a thought. To speak with authority means to give commands, to set expectations, to be able to identify consequences. There are things in my line of work that I can speak with confidence on because I know what's happened when I did the wrong thing. And I can speak with authority on that. If you don't do what I'm telling you to, I can tell the younger fellas on the job, if you don't do it the way I'm telling you to, there's going to be a bad experience. All right? Or this is the reason why we do this. There's a reason why you start all of the bolts before you tighten any of them. They've all heard me tell that. If you're putting on a component, don't put one bolt in and tighten it. Start them all before you start tightening bolts. There's a reason behind that. And it wasn't just the book said it. I know what happens if you don't do it. All right, so it's there's a level of authority there. He says he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Well, how did the scribes talk to them? They had went to the synagogues, and there was someone there that had done teaching and preaching of some sort, however they wanted to consider the speaker at that time. But there had been ideas, there had been things that had been communicated from the scripture, but it was coming from a standpoint of reasoning. Many times in life, we have to reason to make a decision. We have to weigh the best information we can, and we have to reason with them. But Jesus knew what the end result would be. So I want us to keep that in mind as we look into what the Sermon on the Mount has to say, that he taught as one having authority and not as the scribes, not trying to reason or debate, not trying to be able to out-argue or present something that was you really didn't know the consequences, but you didn't know how to defeat it either way. Anyway, you didn't know how to defend your own position because life, we only get one experience. I can tell you what's worked in the past, but life is always changing. So when I get done with life and I come to the end, I'm not going to get another chance to live through it and fix and do it better the second time. And that's the way these scribes and Pharisees were. They were reasoning. They didn't know exactly how it would turn out. Jesus did. He spoke with authority. So let's go back now to the fifth chapter. And let's spend just a little time in something we all call the Beatitudes. He says in verse 3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And we know this word blessed or blessed comes from the same word that could be translated as happy. What kind of reason would the scribes have to give them this kind of thing? Would they ever say this? He goes on to say, "Blessed are they that mourn, or happy are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." Jesus knew that if we could find a place of contentment in our mourning, that it would bring a long-term happiness to us. It would be a sign of real growth in our spirits. He said, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Happy are the meek. We, in our age today, are subjected to so many ideas that are presented that we must assert ourselves, we must defend ourselves, we must look out for ourselves. And here he says, happy are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. They shall be in possession of their own spirits. Have you ever saw it demonstrated where someone was not in control of their own spirits? You know what we're talking about? Maybe a little child that throws a fit and falls on the floor and maybe screams or kicks or maybe just does something unreasonable like just fall over. Just they didn't like it, so they just throw themselves on the floor. Have you ever seen an adult do something like that? Have you? Unfortunately, I have. I knew a man that if you caught him, surprised him at least a bit, he would just flail his arms. Maybe he was a little spooky, but I believe he let things be out of control. I've seen him hurt himself like that. People can become beside themselves. You know what I'm talking about? Screaming, hollering, unhappy, not satisfied with what's going on. They're not in control of themselves. He says here, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. I'm reasoning with you tonight. I'm not speaking like Jesus was. I'm just telling you that if we will learn how to be in possession of our spirits, and practice a meek disposition, did you know that we'll be happier in the long run? If we're not, how many times has a little child that threw a fit and screamed and hollered and fell on the floor, how many times does that end up with a smile? It usually don't. How many times does somebody that just allows their emotions to just explode and they read you the riot act and tell you how to hog ate the cabbage, and how many times does that end up happy? It don't. And that's why Jesus says, I'm reasoning, Jesus was speaking with authority. Jesus said, happy or blessed is the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Do you think that's an easy one to do? No, it's not. Because there's a many a time that we want to, we just want to let it go. Or we do let it go because we've never really got a hold of the essence of what, this is part of the Sermon on the Mount. This is what Jesus was teaching this people. Remember at the end, what did the people say? They were astonished at his doctrine because he taught not like the scribes and Pharisees, but as one that had authority. So here he said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. None of us here like to be hungry. We like to be satisfied with our own physical appetites. I'm talking about food there. But he says, blessed or happy are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. There's going to be something that comes if we will cultivate, part of what our burden was this morning, if we'll cultivate a hunger and a thirst for righteousness, for godliness, there's going to come a happiness and a contentment. I'm reasoning with you. Jesus spoke this with authority. He said, if you'll do this, There's a level of happiness that'll come that you don't get any other way. All right? He says, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. You know, there's some people and there's some situations that we feel like there's really no mercy due. There's really no mercy that's someone else ought to feel some pain. They ought to feel some repercussions. In our human mind, that's what comes to our thought. Well, they ought to suffer a little bit, see what it feels like themselves, or whatever. That thought may come to our mind. But Jesus said, with authority, he said, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed or happy are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. You ever tried to be a peacemaker? Sometimes that's one of the most difficult jobs you can do, is try to be a peacemaker. It's pretty easy if you got people that really deep down love one another and they really want to get along, and maybe it might be a couple siblings or something, and deep down they really want to be friends with one another, and you can kind of maybe discipline them a little bit or coach them a little bit, and it can all turn out happy. But it's not very fun to be in a place where somebody is not wanting to be at peace. And there's not very fun to be in a place trying to help someone and be merciful and they don't want to be merciful. So it says, happy are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. If you're called on to be a peacemaker, to be meek, to display the Christian character in such a way that it'll allow two people or two opposing positions to cohabitate and be able to get along, he said that's a characteristic of the children of God, of a real Christian. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You notice there's a parallel here with verse 3. Verse 3 said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And he says here, blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You ever been made fun of? For your appearance, for your lack of willingness to participate in something, for your stand of not supporting an agenda or something of that nature. Have you ever felt any? I really wanted to be accepted by these people, my family, my friends, my coworkers, all of that, but. Because I won't, they make me feel shameful. They try to make me feel shameful. He says, happy are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. I'm thinking about gaining something here. I'm thinking about us gaining heaven, gaining a spiritual reward, and how many people would, just like when old, what was the man's name that came to be cleansed of his leprosy, and he came down and they told him, the prophet told him to go bathe in a dip in the Jordan River seven times, and Naaman. And just like old Naaman, his servant said, if you'd been asked to do some great thing, wouldn't you do it? You know, many times people will do something dangerous for recognition, dangerous to gain something, maybe really pretty risky to gain something that's valuable. And he says here, blessed are ye when are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom. And he goes on to say, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Every age has had those that have been verbally abused because they were intent on maintaining their integrity with the Lord. Daniel and the three Hebrew children, we mentioned them this morning, but I'm sure that there was more said than bow down or else. I believe that there was a verbal barrage that hit them. Everything the king had done for them and provided for them and educated them, and you mean to tell me that you won't bow down? This is something the king has set up. And they were made to feel like a little grasshopper or something. They were made to feel like they were being ungrateful, unappreciative, that they were miserable excuses for members of his cabinet, if so to speak, of his ruling system. Before the choice was ever made, and still they were able to say, we are not afraid. Our God is able. We will not bow. Even if he don't deliver us, we won't bow. And Jesus said here that we ought to rejoice and be exceeding glad. And it's not easy. Did you know it's not easy to be a Christian? You're going to have some verbal abuse. And that's not very pleasant. But the end of it, Jesus spoke with authority, you remember. And the end of it is, it's a much happier place than if you had denied your faith and bowed to whatever it is. Bowed to the thing that the world is trying to offer. We today have things that are targeted at us. We've mentioned this before many times, but there is unprecedented development in something that has lurked around the fringes of technology for years. Something that they have predicted and projected and all of that, and I don't want to give it any more credit than it really deserves, but the thing I'm talking about is artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence can be pretty amazing, but it's still artificial, all right? Let's don't forget that. It's still artificial. But it targets us. All of us shop for things that we need and things that consumer products that we purchase, we shop for them on the internet. We make purchases on the internet. I'm sure all of us here do and have. And artificial intelligence is busy with that. And they predict and project what another choice. All you've got to do is begin to shop for a washing machine and then decide you want to look for strawberry jam. And you're looking for strawberry jam, and there'll be an advertisement for a washing machine come up alongside the strawberry jam. That's part of artificial intelligence. I mean, that's a very crude illustration. They use that to determine if you're a man or if you're a woman. They use that to determine if you're a teenager, if you're married, if you're middle-aged, or if you're older. And all of that stuff is a continual, you know, every one of your devices has an IP address. And they associate that IP address with what you've shopped for. Everybody out there uses it. Not very many people understand it, but everybody out there uses it. And we today can be under pressure to yield to something and feel like we're less than a man and less than a woman and less than a provider and less than whatever if we don't succumb to some of the propaganda that's out there. But I'm telling you, Jesus taught with authority that we would be happier to allow the reviling to happen and allow the things for ourselves to be poor in spirit. We got a choice here tonight. You can listen to me. That's very probably unpersuasive in a lot of things, and be very uneloquent, if that's a word. Or we can allow ourselves to be subjected to the devices that the world has out there. And yes, the world has always had temptations. The world has always had advertisements, but it's been accelerated exponentially by something we call artificial intelligence. It's getting smoother. It's getting slicker. It's trying to understand how you think. And it's trying to feed something that it thinks it detects. And we have to be strong enough to realize that Jesus taught this as one in authority. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Every generation has had to deal with rejection, with belittlement, with accusations by people that wanted to undermine our confidence in God and undermine our direction in life. So I want to challenge us tonight with just this little part of the Sermon on the Mount. And as we go forward, I would like to look into this more, maybe on Sunday nights, but I want us to think about how that Jesus taught this with authority. He knew the end result. He knows the end result for me today. If I will follow these characteristics, if I will make them a part of my character by His grace and His power, He will help us be able to resist all of those things that come against us that want to intimidate us to fall in and to do something that would violate our integrity with the Lord. Those in the past that were presented with this and held true, we look at them as beacons and heroes and icons of faith, of courage. We look on them as mighty men for the Lord, whether it was Abraham or David or Daniel or his three friends or any of the prophets that stood, Jeremiah that was unwilling to change his message even though they threw him in a pit. And I know they belittled him. I know they told Jeremiah some really ugly things. I know they made him feel not just miserable in the flesh, but the anguish in his mind. Can you imagine what the Paul's contemporaries would have, could have, and probably did say to him when he was arrested or accosted in Jerusalem and ended up being appealing to Caesar? Can you imagine what they said to him? This is Paul. This is the one we grew up with, was Saul. He graduated from the academy with us. And he was the one that was being so effective in persecuting these Christians, and now he's one of them. And Paul, you've lost your mind. They told him that. You speak as someone as too much learning has made you mad. You're not even in your right mind anymore. That can make you feel pretty bad, you know it? Somebody tell you you're not even in your right mind. Lord, help us. I want to have the Christian's correct perspective of being poor in spirit. I want to be courageous. I want to have the strength that the three Hebrew children had. But I don't want to be carnal. I want to have the meekness that God wants me to have. I want to have the hunger and thirsting for righteousness. I want to have the pureness of heart that He would have me to have. You know, it's something to have a pure heart. And then if something comes that looks like it could touch that and violate that a little bit, you know how that causes us to shy away from that. I don't want anything. I don't want anything to violate my integrity with the Lord. I want us to keep that fresh. I don't want us to get in murky water and say, well, I don't know, I don't guess it matters anymore, or I don't think that's important. I don't want us to go there. I want us to keep it fresh. He said, blessed are the, where did he say that? At verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. We want to see Him, don't we? We want to get the reward. Blessed are the peacemakers. When you feel like you're at your wit's end, trying to help resolve some kind of issue, know that you're doing it for the Lord. He says, blessed or happy are the peacemakers. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness. If you feel like you've been persecuted this past week, if you feel like somebody's intimidated you into doing something that has weakened your walk with the Lord, Lord, help us to be willing to, you know, it costs us something. We have to go back and say, you know, I made a bad mistake, or I made a bad decision when I responded the way I did, when I made the choice that I did. It takes a lot of strength to go back and fix those kind of things. But Lord, help us to be able to keep our integrity. I want us, when we come down to the end, if we see somebody that's going astray and they'll let us, we can tell them with authority, that's not the way you ought to go. You need to go a different way. Jesus taught as one having, they were astonished at His doctrine because He spoke as one with authority. Lord, help us to be able to live in a manner that what we say will have authority. You pray for me.